Welcome to the podcast, In the Company of Horses with Mary Ann Brewer, relationship-based horsemanship for the love of horses from A to Z. Today, we're in season one, episode four, where we're on to the letter D, and we're going to learn the lessons of the drive line. So all things draw and drive. We're going to talk about energy and movement from the ground, from all the areas in front, in the middle, and behind our horse, and on left and right, top and bottom, and obviously from the saddle. This is a very literal podcast. There's not a lot of way of being. It's kind of more a way of doing. So thanks for being here, and let's get started. So to make this simple, I'll go ahead and put a photo in the show notes so you can see those at maryannbrewer.com. But for just the simple explanation of about where the drive line is on the horse, it's if you were to lay a necklace around the base of your horse's neck, so just in front of its shoulders, just around the base of his neck, if it just were to just fall there naturally, it would land in the middle of his chest. So the drive line for most horses is somewhere between exactly where that necklace would fall, and maybe just a little bit back, maybe halfway through his foreleg, his shoulder. And the drive line is on top, it's on bottom, it's on the left, and on the right. And obviously it's an imaginary line, there's nothing that you'll see that's there. But I've learned that if I can work in areas in front of and behind and right alongside those areas, I can usually get horses to go where I want them to go. And the best way you'll learn about this is if you work on this at Liberty. It's actually how you'll learn exactly where the drive line is, because sometimes when we have our ropes attached, we're not always necessarily present to what it is that we're doing. We kind of go on autopilot a little bit. And it happens to everyone. You're not alone. We just kind of do what we do. In my webinar, I say it's the push me, pull you kind of syndrome, you know, where we kind of don't even really think about so much what we're doing. We just kind of do what we've always done. So my goal here today with this podcast is to give you some nuts and bolts about moving with your horse. And while it's not sexy, what will happen is when you employ these principles of movement, your horsemanship will really become sexy. And it's also a way to create lightness when you really understand where to be and then what to do when you're in that space. And by the way, this podcast has nothing to do with like driving, as in like having your horse hitched up to some farm equipment or some sort of a cart or something like that, some sort of a carriage. That's not what I'm going to talk about today. However, this work certainly applies to those ideas as well. So we're going to start by talking about applying pressure. Okay, and I want to talk about pressure in a couple of ways. So there's real pressure that is intended pressure or physical pressure. And intended pressure you can mean to put pressure intentionally in a place, or it can just happen even without your intention, just by looking in a particular area or in a particular place or at a particular animal. I had a really amazing experience recently where I was out hiking in British Columbia on Vancouver Island, and I was in a really super remote place, and I was kind of exploring around this gorgeous alpine lake. I was just eating berries, and it was just a kind of a really beautiful experience. And I came upon this, I was kind of walking in the water around, you know, kind of around the lake as best I could. There was really no trail, no path. There were just all these berries everywhere. And I came upon a stream that was coming into the lake where I was. It was definitely coming down a hill. And I found it because it was freezing when I came upon it. You know, I was walking in the water with just my bare feet. So I decided to go ahead up that stream for a little bit and follow it and just, I don't know, see if I could see a waterfall or something really cool like that. And I couldn't get very far. I maybe got 10 feet up the hill. It was a mountain, actually. I couldn't go very far because there were like down trees. And like I said, there was no path. But I turned around to come down and to go back to the lake. And standing right there, not 20 feet in front of me, was a mother grizzly bear with her hand on the tree. She was standing up looking directly at me. And I saw her cub go around the tree behind her. I never saw the cub's face. I just turned around and I said, I instantly thought, oh, I'm so sorry. I shouldn't be here. I have to go. And I instantly turned around and I went back like up as far as I could go, which at that point was only a couple of feet, you know, because there was really nowhere to go. I for me anyway, she was a grizzly bear. She probably could have gone anywhere she wanted and pretty darn quickly. But the look on her face was a look of both surprise, but intentionality. She clearly saw me before I saw her. And the instant message I got was, I have to go. Happily, I climbed up on this little kind of a horizontal tree and I turned around and I looked and she was gone. I didn't know where she went, but I felt the freedom now to go back down this little stream that I was walking up because it was really the only way down, and in hopes that she wasn't doubling back with any kind of intention that I couldn't see or feel, but I really did have a strong intention that she was away. So what I'm saying is that that pressure can come even kind of by accident, especially in a prey predator situation. Even though when I saw the bear, we were both really predators. I felt very much like a prey animal in that moment. And I very much could have been a prey animal in that moment, but horses live in that skin. Horses are prey animals all the time. I'm not sure that they ever get predatory. So that's an example of intended pressure that I could definitely feel, but it was also energetic pressure. She was not throwing anything at me other than energy and intention. Now, if she had started moving toward me, that would have been physical and energetic pressure. I would have known for sure that I needed to get out of there. Well, I knew for sure I needed to get out of there, but I would have probably felt her pressure in a whole different way. So for our horses, we can start adding pressure just by looking at them, and then we can add some sort of pressure simply by having an idea that we're going to move toward them, because horses are masters of reading intention, especially the intention of the predator, since they are prey animals and they live in the prey animal skin all the time. So people who say, you know, I don't like to work in pressure and release, there's no way you can not work in pressure and release when there's a prey-predator relationship, because the simple act of us showing up in a prey animal's sphere of influence or in their bubble, however far away that bubble is, causes them pressure. And you can just think to yourself about deer or a rabbit that you might come upon, or even different birds that you might come upon and startle. Just the simple presence that we have by showing up can have them be responsive to our pressure of just being there. Then we can certainly add to it by having an intention or even acting on it by moving toward them or moving maybe even bigger or in a more assertive or aggressive way. So those things vary. And we'll talk more about pressure and lightness and creating all of those things in another podcast, because today I really want to keep focusing on the nuts and bolts of where to be as far as the drive line is concerned. So real pressure that is physical, so it starts as intention, moves into energetic, and then turns into physical, could be either steady pressure or it could be rhythmic pressure. So steady pressure and rhythmic pressure are the two types of physical pressure. And as an example of steady pressure, what that might look like, it might come in a couple of different ways. So, for example, if the bear saw me and was coming toward me and I saw her, so her just the simple act of her walking toward me could have been steady pressure for me. There was no real release because she was coming straight at me. So for our horse, if we're coming at them in a particular area, you know, either by their nose or by their body or by their hindquarters, they could physically feel our steady pressure of moving toward them. Or the other way we can apply steady pressure is already physical, meaning there's a touch that happens. And that touch is just a steady touch. Now that steady pressure can also be a very soft, light touch, and it can just get stronger and stronger and stronger. And you can think about, you know, how you might touch your horse or how you might your horse might touch you. There might be just a lay of your hand on, or there might be a real push, like with the palm of your hand, or there might be, like if a horse is going to push against you, it might be leaning against you with its shoulder or stepping on your foot. That would be an example of steady pressure too. Now, rhythmic pressure is not going to be constant. So again, you could use the example of the bear coming toward me as an intentional and a rhythmic pressure that's also steady. So she's coming toward me at a steady walk, and I'm feeling the pressure, but there's definite rhythm in what she's doing. She's not out of harmony or out of time. And so when I say rhythmic pressure, that's really what I mean. I mean that there's a rhythm to it. It's predictable, and you know that it's going to happen. You know that it's coming. You can see it coming. You can feel it coming. And it's predictable. And then when there's actual contact, you know, it might be like a wiggling of your rope. If you're riding, you might think about using some sort of rhythmic pressure in your leg or something, you know, like you might wiggle your toe or tickle the side of your horse's body with your leg. In the world of natural horsemanship, we'll see people all the time, we'll see them swinging their ropes, you know, in a certain area of the horse, creating rhythmic pressure. Sometimes what you might see is people will wiggle the halter, you know, in some sort of rhythm, or they'll pull on a lead chain or something like that in a little bit of a rhythmic manner. So those would be examples of rhythmic pressure. And then, of course, when you're on top of your horse and you're riding your horse, you can think about the rhythm that your body creates when you're at the walk, or the rhythm your body creates when you're at the trot. And you can, it's very obvious at the rising trot, like you can really see what kind of rhythm is available in the rising trot. And then the same thing with the canter, or the halt for that matter. The absence of rhythm, there's a halt where there's nothing happening, or there's at least a halt that's happening. So you can see how your horse would be very sensitive to all of these different places where we can provide all of these different cues and signals for our horses to do the things we want them to do. But now back to the drive line, okay? So imagine, right, your horse is wearing this necklace, and that's about where the drive line is. Now, if you want your horse to go backwards or away, at first, what will happen, and you'll be in front of the drive line, and you can apply real or intended or rhythmic or steady pressure in front of the horse's drive line, and the horse will probably either move back or it will move away. It could also move toward. If you think about putting steady pressure like on the halter and the lead rope, if you take all the slack out of the lead rope and you put steady pressure toward you or toward, you know, left or right, the horse is probably going to move toward you. If you think about going behind the drive line, so somewhere behind your horse's shoulder, you can think about asking your horse to step over one step, maybe by putting your hand on the horse's barrel. Or you can ask the hindquarters maybe to step over a little bit by putting your hand on the horse's hindquarters. So that would be steady pressure. Or you can touch them with something in a rhythmic way. You know, like once your horse understands moving away from steady pressure, and it's not going to be hard for them to learn that. anything, just your finger tapping, or, you know, with an intention, your foot maybe tapping on their foot, or a leaf you might pick up, or a tree branch you might pick up. It doesn't have to be anything big, and it doesn't have to be hard. It just needs to be rhythmical with an intention behind it. It also applies to when you're picking up your horse's foot, right? You'll pick them up with steady pressure, probably, or you can think about moving in a really slow rhythm with different phases. Some people, when they want to pick up a horse's foot, they'll just tap on it in a slow and steady rhythm. Some people will turn a chestnut or, you know, squeeze a hock. And some people will just lift with steady pressure. So steady pressure happens in those places too. So your horse is obviously going to get used to all these things. And if you're applying steady pressure in an upward fashion on your horse's foot, he shouldn't be thinking about moving forward. If you're applying steady pressure somewhere on your horse, you want them to yield to it. The whole goal of applying steady pressure on your horse is that they yield to it, meaning they find a way to have the pressure stop. So if it's a foot, they're going to pick it up. If they're you're leading them, they're going to move off the pressure of the halter, and they're going to move into putting slack in the lead rope. Rhythmic pressure is a little bit different, because oftentimes when people apply rhythmic pressure to horses, they want them to move away. I don't really teach my horses that. I find it easier to use rhythmic pressure if I'm away from my horse, like farther away from my horse, if I actually can't reach out and touch them. It's much easier to use rhythmic pressure. But if I'm within an arm's distance, it's easier to use steady pressure in all these areas. Ask my horse to go either up or down or left or right or forward or back. So that's kind of how I think about it. So if I'm within an arm's distance, then I can use my steady pressure. But if I'm not, then I use some sort of rhythmic pressure. And just like the bear, that rhythmic pressure can look like, you know, first I'm looking with intention, and then I move myself toward, you know, this place I want to move, or I'll move myself away with intention, like an intention to draw. But either way, that's going to be rhythmic pressure. And you can think also in rhythmic pressure, like if you were going to be on the ground and you were doing some sort of physical exercises with your horse where you actually wanted the haunches to come toward you, right? You can put a little intention over there, put a little rhythm in your body that says, hey, move your feet, and you can draw them toward you. And so that would be a combination of intended pressure and rhythmic pressure, both in one scenario. So the short of it is if you're in front of the drive line, which is that space where a necklace would naturally fall, and you put real or intended or steady or rhythmic pressure in front of the drive line, your horse is probably either going to come toward you or go away, or it's going to go backwards. It's not likely going to want to move forward into that pressure. That would be the goal, that it doesn't do that. And that actual little exercise where you can really put a lot of rhythm in your rope and it affects the halter or steady or rhythmic pressure in front of the drive line can really save your life. It can stop a horse from moving forward. And it really is where we ride from, right? So if you're riding your horse and you happen to use some apparatus on their face, you know, either a halter or even a neck rope for that matter, a neck rope would land typically in front of the drive line or it's usually in front of the drive line. So if you have any kind of a bridle or any kind of hardware on your horse's face, typically what you're doing is you're using steady or rhythmic pressure to ask your horse to either go backwards, turn left or right. And when I say go backwards, that could include a stop, anything from slowing the forward motion to stopping the forward motion. And by the same token then, right, so we'll take that same scenario. So if you're riding your horse, and no matter what you have on your horse's head, if you have anything on your horse, you're still going to be sitting behind the drive line. So you're going to completely leave your horse's head alone and think about sitting on your horse and using some sort of steady pressure or rhythmic pressure to go, even if it's an intended pressure. If you have an idea that moves into your body, even if you don't squeeze your legs or even if you don't apply any rhythm at all, your horse is still going to feel the pressure from behind the drive line and probably move forward. And by the same token, you can ask your horse what just by sitting there on top of your horse to come up toward you or to hollow its back or to move its hindquarters forward or left or right. You can ask your horse to move sideways from that area. And you can even think about, and this is a little bit of a more advanced way of riding, while you're there in the riding area, think about what do you need to do to help your horse to actually go backwards. And if you've been using your body and you've been using your phases and your thinking and your intention and your feel and your timing and you and your horse are really connected, you'll just have your body go in a little bit of backward motion, you know, thinking about moving those feet one foot at a time, and your horse will come right back into that into that rhythmic pressure that you're applying, because that's how you've taught your horse, and your horse is nice and responsive. I was thinking of the other reasons why you might want your horse to move into steady pressure or move toward you, and I was thinking about unloading your horse out of maybe a two-horse straight load trailer or even a slant load trailer where you want to actually put some steady pressure on their tail and ask them to follow the feel on their tail and come backwards. I was also thinking about if you want to have your horse come and pick you up off of a log or off of a tree, a down tree or off of a fence or even off of a mounting block for that matter. If you just want to get on that mounting block and draw your horse to you, that might be a reason why you want those hindquarters to come to you or that barrel to come to you, but not come through you, right? Like not knock you off of the thing you're on trying to help yourself. And then too, that whole idea of actually driving horses, from behind, like so being all the way behind them and asking them to, you know, push into a harness apparatus to actually pull a cart or pull a log or pull a carriage of some sort. That is, you know, in that case, you're really in all the areas of the horse. You're in front of the drive line, like at the face. You're in front of the drive line where the yoke goes, where the harness attaches in front of the horse's chest. And then you've got your traces that are on both sides of the horse's body, so they come behind the drive line. And then there's your cart all the way behind the drive line. So you really then are in all those areas of the horse, really asking for like a concert to happen all at one time. So that's the kind of thing that is something to really practice in all those different areas. And if you're actually somebody who teaches horses the act of pulling something, driving, you know, we have a large standard bred population around where we are, you might really consider thinking about all those different things when you're really teaching these horses, because when you can isolate and separate them, you can really probably help them to not have worries about all the different areas, you know, in front of, alongside, and behind the drive line. It could be maybe a new awareness in the teaching around that might actually make a difference for some horses. Because if you've ever seen a horse with a cart in a wreck, it is a messy situation. Then the very last thing I want to talk about is I like to be on the ground with horses. I love to play with horses at liberty, and so even when I have ropes attached, so at liberty means that I have no ropes attached, no halters, no lead ropes, just the horse and it's me, and we have a relationship that's our connection. But even if I have ropes attached, when I talk to people about groundwork that transfers to riding, I really want to help people understand that I don't want you necessarily looking at your horse creating pressure. Like I want you to be shoulder to shoulder, and I want you to think about, like, so if I have a nice long rope, like my favorite rope is like 20 feet long. So if I have a nice 20 foot long rope and my horse is like, you know, 15 or 16 feet away from me and we're just going together, I just want to be shoulder to shoulder, and I want my horse just to go, and I just want to go, and I don't want to be talking to him about going. I just want us being responsible for going, just like if I were walking with you and, you know, we were walking together somewhere. I wouldn't be telling you to keep going or to keep up or to slow down or not going in front of me, right? We would just be being responsible for walking together. So I like my horses to do that same thing. And so I want to think about if my horse is stopping when we're just trying to go out and walk together, is it because I'm in front of the drive line? So even if I'm 15 or 16 feet away, or even if I'm 20 or 30 or 40 or 75 feet away, or however far away from my horse, you know, he actually is affected by things. Like, all horses have a different sensitivity level to how close or far away things are, you know, before they bother them. Like, some horses look at things that are 5 miles away, and some horses aren't even worried when something's 10 feet in front of them, you know? So depending on what your spatial awareness is with your horse, you know, I want to look to see that if my horse keeps stopping and he's not taking his responsibility of walking with me, am I in front of the drive line? I just want to glance over my shoulder and say, is the geometry of where I am, if I just drew a straight line between me and him, am I in front of his drive line? And maybe if I just slowed down a little bit and let him get in front of let me get behind the drive line and get in, you know, where he moves in front a little bit, maybe he'll keep going. Maybe I actually want him to go slower, so I want to take one step and actually end up in front of the drive line. But still, I'm at a distance away from him. Horses are very, very perceptive to the geometry, to the physical space between us. So I hope that makes a difference for you. When you're moving with your horse, if you can just think about all the different areas of your horse and why you do what you do, why do you put rhythm in your hands when you're riding, or what does that steady pressure do? Especially if you're a young rider and you're just learning how to ride, imagine if you're riding a horse that maybe doesn't want to go, are you putting steady pressure in front of the drive line while you're busy being behind the drive line asking your horse to go? Maybe what you need to do is release any pressure that might be in front of the drive line so he can move forward. And then as you go, as you want to think about having your horse collect himself a little bit more, and you want to actually have some sort of a feel on the line in front of the drive line while you're riding so he can, you know, carry himself into it, then, you know, you probably aren't going to have trouble with him going because he's already going to have learned that he needs to go. And by the same token, if you're riding and you're finding that your horse doesn't want to slow down, are you putting steady pressure behind the drive line with your body? Are your legs squeezing, or are they in a lot of rhythm? Are they very, very busy? Sometimes we blame all that stuff on the horse. You know, we say, well, you know, my horse doesn't want to go, or my horse, you know, is so fast he doesn't want to stop. And, you know, sometimes certainly we have horses that have a lot of go and they don't want to stop, or we have a lot of horses that, you know, have a lot of woe and they don't want to go. So certainly that can happen. But we want to look always to see what is our part in that. You know, on the ground, in our groundwork, are we blocking our horses? Are we really in their way? Even if we are, like I said, 17, 18, 20 feet away, are we in front of them and blocking them? Or is our intended pressure, like just the look, like with that grizzly bear, you know, that bear looking at me from 20 feet away, you know, she blocked my space in no time, right? I'm like, oh, I have to turn around and go. Are we doing that? And then getting upset with our horse because they're not going. Sometimes our shoulders, just turning our shoulders, you know, toward or away from our horse can block or unblock them. They're very sensitive beings. And then, of course, when we're riding, you know, are we blocking? Are we blocking so they can't go forward? Or are we blocking so they can't stop? So essentially, the lessons of the drive line are really all about awareness. It is the nuts and bolts of actually physically moving horses, moving with horses, and, of course, stopping with horses. But there's certainly a lot of nuance in all of that. And sometimes, you know, the drive line is a very, very, very small place. Some very sensitive horses, you just get slightly behind the drive line and they just want to shoot out forward, or you just get slightly in front of the drive line and they just want to stop dead on a dime. So have fun playing with all of that. I'd love to hear any kind of things that you discover while you're experimenting and playing with the lessons of the driveline out there with your horse, whether you're on the ground or you're riding. I hope you'll join us on our next podcast. And we're on to the letter E, and we're going to talk about emotions, horses being emotional beings, and us becoming emotionally agile, emotionally fit. So thanks for joining in the Company of Horses podcast. I'm your host, Marianne Brewer. Relationship-based horsemanship for the love of horses from A to Z.